Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to KER Politics. We're talking about a number of things today. We're going to talk about a profile of what's going on in the biggest mistake in the world, which is called Russia invading the Ukraine. We're going to talk a little bit about the DMJ. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the economy, which is very, very grim given where the market is today in the United States. And we're going to talk a little bit about basically what I would have to call politics in general in America. We're going to start talking about what's going on in the Ukraine. Jimmy, where do we stand right now and where does Russia stand, buddy?
So Russia's in a tough position. Of course, the conflict is, the dynamics have changed significantly in the last week. As we predicted, as what I'd said on this show numerous times over the last month, Ukrainians were preparing, did a very effective preparation of the battlefield for an offensive. And what they did is they started taking actions down in the Crimea and in some key strategic locations, logistics, supplies, and airfield, destroyed a lot of aircraft, destroyed a lot of weapons and material support for frontline troops down in the south. That forced the Russians to reposition troops down onto the northern portion of the Crimea Peninsula. And then the Ukrainians took offensive actions in Kharkiv and basically in the northeastern section of the Russian-occupied areas. In about the last 3 or 4 days, they've taken back nearly 2,500 square miles of property. 2,500 square miles of property from Russian-controlled occupied areas.
Boy, did Putin make a mistake or what, Jimmy?
Well, it's not over, but, you know, I've said from the beginning, Al, and I think you agreed with me, that this was a mistake before he started.
Sure.
And what, you know, there's been a lot of players involved here. Of course, the Russians in the invasion in Ukrainian positions, they had two major public objectives.
Yeah.
One was to force Ukraine from becoming a NATO member.
And that's not going to work.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
And then the second major objective was to, quote, denazify Ukraine.
Yeah.
And what we found and what the Russian soldiers in command has found is there wasn't a large group of people that were happy to be not denazified. In fact, the Ukrainians really rallied around their president, Zelensky, the guy that won a 73% victory in the election in 2019. They rallied around him. They were unable to take his government out of power within the first 72 hours to, you know, 96 hours, which would have been critical for success for their operation.
Yeah.
And basically people have found out that, you know, yes, Azov Battalion, there was a couple of, you know, quote, you know, right-wing extremist organizations, basically nationalists fighting for their territory.
Yeah.
But the reality is most people were just like, didn't want Russia to be there. And that's been a challenge. So they failed there, and with the public, you know, the campaign to somehow show they were denazifying. And then the second part of it with the NATO membership, what's happened in this 6, 7 months since their invasion is, in fact, NATO has expanded to two actually quite capable allies, Sweden and Finland. Both have asked and now been given okay to be NATO members. They have capable militaries, they have high technology equipment, and they're on the northern border with Russia. So this was a boneheaded move on Putin's part, because in fact he intimidated people and they said, no, we need NATO to stop this aggression. Now, he's been doing well. Putin has been making money in the energy sector because he stayed connected with China. The Indians are still buying energy from him. He's, you know, economically, the sanctions were, you know, somewhat useless that went against him. However, in the long term, what has happened is the European Union's realized how obligated they were to Russia and Putin's control with energy. So they're making very painful but deep strides to decouple themselves from Russia influence and impact. In the long term, that's not going to benefit Putin at all.
No.
And I think this, you know, the ultimate problem here for Russia is if they would have been successful in the first week or so to change the government in Kiev, to basically, you know, use their propaganda effort to, you know, to shape people's opinion that it was a corrupt government, and if they were successful in that, this would be a completely different world. But they weren't. They failed, and yeah. Now they're losing ground, and the more they're losing ground, the more painful it's going to be, and it's actually beginning, there's so many Russian casualties, it's beginning an impact at home, and Vladimir Putin is actually losing support by both media, and not directly him, but the war, his objectives. The media is attacking him and attacking the war in his country now. They're not able to arrest everybody that's complaining. And in fact, some senior members of the Duma, their legislature, are actually speaking out against the failures and the mistakes. There's been an assassination attempt, or at least a reported assassination attempt, against Putin in the last 48 hours, 72 hours. And many of his jailed opponents, people that were actually not happy with it, are you know, beginning to be recognized as this, you know, exactly what Putin is. He's a totalitarian leader that's pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
And now he's really suffering. And I think it's going to be incredibly painful process for the next few months. I don't think it's over yet. We don't know what's going to happen, how he'll respond.
Yeah.
But the pain is great for all sides, but the Ukrainians are doing quite well right now.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. We got about 10 minutes left in this particular segment. What is it? Yeah, it is about about 3 minutes left. Let me ask you this. How do you feel China fits into this thing? I personally think China is a major player. I think if China rallied against what the Russians were doing, I think that the Ukraine would be totally independent territory right now. But we haven't seen China do that. I think that President Xi is, quite frankly, handling the situation very well in terms of the relationship between Russia and Communist China.
I think Xi, from the beginning, used Putin and probably gave the go-ahead, hey, we'll support you on this.
Yeah.
And I think he was using it as a template, to actually a test ground to see how the West would respond. And of course, that would, and how actually Joe Biden and the Biden regime would respond to actions. So he's looking at what can happen and whether or not that would impact a Chinese movement on Taiwan. And of course, what he's seeing, he's going to have to be very careful. But we do know that just in the last, you know, couple of days, that Putin and Xi have met. They're working with the Iranians in an attempt to try to put together a coalition to counter the EU and the United States. But they've been, you know, the weapon systems that were used have failed from the Russian, you know, on the Russian side. Western technology has done a better job, even though the much smaller Ukrainian forces, the technology's been better. Russian momentum has stalled, but not only that, the morale of its soldiers is very, very low, and they don't actually understand what's happening and why they're there.
Yeah.
So all those factors, Xi's been playing pretty effectively, looking at them, watching it, which hopefully will keep them from taking actions in Taiwan. But at the same time, they're saying they're going to back Russia, and that could be a more problematic east-west confrontation over time.
It's a really complicated situation. Jim, we've only got about 10 seconds left here before we have to take a commercial break. What I want to get into in the next segment, which is the shortest segment on the show, is I want to get your opinion about how Biden has handled the situation. I'll do the same thing and give my opinion. Stick around, you guys.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
continue our discussion right now a little bit about the Ukraine with a couple of topics that I mentioned at the end of the last segment. The first topic is going to get Jim's opinion and my opinion on how President Xi of mainland China is handling the situation with Russia. And we're going to talk a little bit about how Biden is handling the situation. I want to start out, I want to talk a little bit with Jimmy about how President Xi is handling the situation. I think he's handling it in an absolutely perfect manner. Jim, what do you think?
I think the problem, so where I agree with you in one aspect that Xi has been quite effective at keeping a little bit of distance while continuing to support the Russian actions in Ukraine. So he's been doing that carefully. The problem that he's facing is that as Russia loses ground and territory and potentially, you know, there's a potential that they actually fail in this operation, then he's tied to that.
Yeah.
But here's the bigger problem that he's facing. He's tied himself to this action and supported Putin. What that's doing to Western countries and Western leaders is saying, wait a second, we can't trust Putin, we can't trust China. So the long-term effect is people disengaging with China, with Chinese manufacturing, and of course beginning to push back on their rapidly growing influence throughout Africa and Asia,
yeah,
and of course in the United States and the EU through manufacturing and bond buying. So I think the problem for Xi is decoupling. If the United States and EU decouples from China based on this relationship with Russia, the Chinese are already facing some pretty severe economic issues because of their 100% lockdown, zero COVID strategy, and because of, you know, basic pushback because of these actions, their actions in support of Putin and the Russian invasion. That could be problematic for him, as we're seeing the same type of problems that Putin's facing. You know, if Putin loses this, and this is the desperation problem, if Putin loses this war, he may lose his grip on power completely. And that could be very problematic for stability in the region, certainly within Russia and its outlying states. But the cost of this thing is massive, and regardless of the money they've been making, making up for the manufacturing, the loss of tanks and equipment and artillery, yeah, and the people is really, really bad, really, yeah, significant.
Jimmy, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the U.S. and our reaction, our reaction, but even more importantly, how we're handling the situation, how the government is handling the situation now. The one thing that I would notice is that most leaders from other major countries have visited Ukraine. Neither the president nor the vice president have been over there whatsoever. Neither has Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House. None of the powerful U.S. politicians have been over to the Ukraine to show support for Zelensky. Why do you think that is? And the Ukrainian people. Why do you think that is, Jimmy?
Well, obviously, it's a high-risk situation for,
yeah,
them to go.
Right.
But I think Anthony Blinken's the most senior, the Secretary of State's been the most senior representative,
yeah, right,
visit.
Right.
And we know that Lloyd Austin has spent some time in the area. The problem is for them, and this is a, you know, they still have the legacy of the absolute debacle from the Afghan withdrawal.
Yeah.
And if they're tied too closely to failure, then, of course, that looks pretty bad. But at the same time, the ability to actually provide any input and confidence and support, when Biden was over there in Poland, he made some boneheaded remarks recently. And I think it's going to be a tough time for them to actually, they failed, in my view, to take actions prior to this invasion that could have stopped the invasion before it ever started, with very good coordinated efforts with NATO partners and memberships, with a military committee there. They could have set in place some things that showed that they were going to take action, making sanctions, declaring what they were going to do prior,
yeah,
to the invasion,
yeah,
rather,
yeah,
than waiting till after. There's a number of issues they failed at. So from my perspective, It's been a dismal performance by the United States, other than just throwing money and weapons at the problem, which has actually been killing a lot of people when they could have solved it very early. And the second part of it, though, that I think people got to watch out for, if in fact the Ukrainians are successful in the next month and a half, you're going to see the Biden regime take credit for stopping this war in spite of their absolute ridiculous policies and failed objectives. And and that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. My guess is Putin is not going to quit that. Some people think it's over with already. But my guess is there's going to be some other actions that go on here, and it's going to be problematic for a while, at least through the end of this year.
What kind of actions, Jimmy? Be specific.
So he still has, you know, he still has a large military force. Most of his capable forces have been thrown into battle, but he can still reinforce and protect Crimea. It's really important for him to maintain the Crimea because of the Black Sea Fleet and his ability to geostrategically project power into Europe and into the Med, into the South Atlantic. That stuff is under pressure when he loses. His ability to do that is under significant pressure if he loses Sevastopol and the port and the Black Sea Fleet. So he needs to hold that from and people, the military will actually take action against him if they lose that. So I think he's going to reinforce there. He's going to do whatever it takes to do that. It's going to cost him a fortune. It's going to drag out longer, but it'll be a negotiation effort. That'll be kind of a chip that he can use to stop the conflict and maybe go back to the boundaries prior to the invasion of February.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting situation right now. I think that I think the Ukraine is going to be a very large thorn in the side of Russia. And where I really, really admire Xi is there's no way that Ukraine is going to be a thorn in the side of China. There's no question about that. You know, Jim, we're about a minute away from the second half of the program, which is preceded by the top of the hour news. I want to get back to America. Our economy is really falling on its tail right now. We are experiencing a very, very difficult stock market right now. People are losing money hand over fist right now. And as we're recording on Friday, it's a very, very bad day in the market. Inflation is absolutely running rampant. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I'm looking for solutions, Jim. I'd like to know what you think the administration could do. And let's talk about this in the next segment. I would really like to know what you think the administration could do to straighten out our economy, because if they don't do something, there is absolutely no way that they're going to remain in the executive office. And I think that would be, quite frankly, a good thing. Ladies and gentlemen, top of the hour news is next. Stick around. We'll be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
KER Report, KER Politics. You know, Jim was in Washington, D.C. last weekend. That was a week ago. And came across some very, very interesting things. He was there for a board meeting, if I'm not mistaken, for a financial advisory company that he is a member of the board of directors. And what I'd like to ask you, Jim, is I know you guys talked about where the economy is going, where it is right now, and what impact that's going to have on the country. What did you guys come up with in that area?
Yeah, so we had the Investment Company Institute, which is basically the association for all mutual funds.
Right.
You know, it's very, very, very large organization with, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of major funds, including, you know, Fidelity and BlackRock, Vanguard are all represented there. Their economists and their government affairs people spoke to our board. Mm-hmm. And We've got a member of our board that is, or member of our organization that actually is, sits on one of the senior members of the overall ICI council. So luckily we were able to get some good insight. Some of the things that we talked about on the economic side, the real problem with inflation, the core inflation numbers are just not looking good at all. And as we are facing, you know, kind of the legacy issues of the high fuel prices, the transportation distribution issues, and of course, you know, the amount of government money that's been pumped into the system, you're facing a very significant dilemma. And I will tell you that the economists had expected, and most economists expected, that the consumer, the inflation numbers for Tuesday morning were going to be relatively flat, similar to what happened in the previous month. And he had said, well, you know, you may see the market go up, but ultimately we're talking about core inflation issues and the long-term impact of some of the, some of the problems with housing and the real difficulties with rents, and of course the problem with this labor market. When he said that on Monday afternoon, I was somewhat, questioning whether or not the numbers would come out right. In our discussions, I thought that we may still see a higher increase, and of course we did, and we had, this unbelievable 1,300-1,200 point drop in the Dow, NASDAQ, and we're talking, 4 and 5% drops in the major markets.
Yeah.
And we've had, a fairly weak week, lower week all week, including today, which it's Friday as we record this. So those core inflation issues are going to force the Fed to continue to take action. They're going to try to slow the economy, but the economy is having very big challenges already, Al. And
Let's talk about some of those challenges, Jim.
Yeah, so, you can't find labor.
No.
A lot of people have left the workforce. They're not going back into the workforce, and then there's a lot of jobs that have been available. Simultaneously, as you see a slowdown in consumer purchases, which is really out of consumer CPI and out of this inflation number, the wholesale price index, you see people are slowing down, that industry is slowing down their purchasing and preparation. So we're looking, we had two consecutive quarters of GDP decline. That's technically a recession.
Yeah.
And we're going to see more problems with that. So the labor issue is people aren't going back to work, and then people can't find workers to go into work. And that's going to cause a problem. And I think some of the numbers have been a little bit, they're a little bit fraudulent. You've got dual working families. You've got some people that are out there doing it. But these problems, the labor problems, are going to exacerbate the inflation issue because it's going to force wages up.
Yeah.
And when wages go up, some of these businesses, they can't hire people, or if they do, they have to pay them more. And we're going to see, this kind of like eat its own cycle, it's just get worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that it's a very interesting, omen for the election that's coming up mid-year here in November, I guess I should say, of 2022, and more importantly, what's going to happen in 2024. The economy in my neck of the woods, for lack of better terms, which used to be your neck of the woods, is absolutely abysmal right now. Small businesses continue to be shuttering their doors, shutting their doors. Many of the restaurants are closing up around here because people simply, they simply cannot hire help, number one. And the cost of their of food to them has gone up about 30%. And consequently, many of them cannot pass that cost on to the, for lack of better terms, their customers. So it's pretty grim up here right now. The only thing that's looking fairly good and that the administration keeps crowing about is that energy costs are down, fuel costs are down a bit. They're down here. Gasoline is down to probably in the neighborhood of $5 a gallon for regular, but that's really not making a big difference to people, Jim.
Well, it's still up about 50% from this, this time last year.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant. And what, let's talk energy, because a lot of people think that because the war in Ukraine's over, and they think the war's over. I actually had some very influential, powerful investment types with a lot of experience this last weekend in Washington thinking, oh, yep, war's over. It'll be a couple weeks. It's done. Well, that doesn't change what the Europeans are doing to break away from the Russian influence over energy.
Yeah.
So that's going to continue to be a problem. So that's going to put pressure on energy. And you talked before the last break about, what do we do to solve, to kind of get us out of some of these problems? Well, the first thing to do is to open the spigots up on U.S. energy production. The Biden administration with these green agendas have really stifled domestic energy production. But if we could increase energy and gas and then increase exports, we could reduce the pressure on the Europeans and lower our prices, which would in fact probably help some of the transportation distribution issues, as well as potentially lower some of these rising inflation costs. The problem is they're spending more money to go more green and to actually cut off energy, because that's kind of the policy. That is the policy right now, the underlying policy, social engineering policy that the Biden regime is pushing forward with. And it's incredibly damaging to the economy and to people, because there's nothing to fill that gap. And the people that suffer the most are absolutely the people at the bottom end of the economic spectrum.
Yeah.
And that's what's really going to, I think, going to come back and slap them right in the face.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Unless we have a miraculous recovery, I have to say, at the polls, I think that the left side of the aisle is very definitely going to suffer much more than they ever thought that they would. But that remains to be seen. Jimmy, typically, how is the firm that you're involved with right now as a member of the board of directors? What are you guys telling your clients?
Well, so I'm an independent trustee for the investment trust. So the people that manage the funds, I'm not part of that. And I don't want to actually take credit for doing that. But a lot of people, and the management there is just saying, hey, look, equities for inflation is where you go. You hold equities for a long period of time. Eventually they fill it out.
Yeah.
You don't want cash. You're losing money in cash, of course. And you don't want to, completely pull out at a deep loss.
Right.
So, the challenges out there are where to find that money that will be stable for a period of time, because we know across the board we've had significant losses in most of the markets. And I would recommend, from my perspective, you need to get out and actually spend a lot of time researching what you're going to do and get solid assets, real estate, some things that are going to last that actually can ride the inflation curve.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to take a real quick commercial break here. We're going to be right back to close up KER Politics. It certainly is an interesting week. KER Politics, we're going to talk about some of the domestic situations that are going on right now, specifically the situation that's going on in Martha's Vineyard, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in terms of the sanctuary cities. Jim, I think what's going on in Martha's Vineyard is absolutely hilarious. You got an opinion?
Oh, yeah, I'm right there with you, Al. It is hilarious. Here are these social justice warriors, and they're out there talking about sanctuary cities and these very elite, exclusive, leftist, liberal places. And then, of course, when they actually are faced with the reality that is anybody that lives on the southern border right now, they immediately cry foul, scream and yell about the abuse of the people, when in fact their policies are what are creating all these situations down on the border, and they should be living with it and they should be eating it. And of course, immediately today, this is Friday, they've actually moved the visitors, the migrants from Martha's Vineyard to a military base on Cape Cod.
Yeah. Is that going to solve any problems?
No, but hopefully it's going to wake people up to the hypocrisy. Really, you know, I think it was a brilliant move on both Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis, the two governors, to do this, because it's really forcing these sanctuary policies and these leftist progressive, actually, you know, disgusting cities to face the reality that is being, you know, that everyone on the border is facing. And what a tragedy it is to have the potential enticement of open borders to these people to bring them there, and all the damage that it's done, and the reality. So, you know, of what it takes to actually do this and to manage it and how much it costs. And they're freaking out about it, but they haven't done it. They've just, you know, until now, they haven't had to face it. So again, I think a political, brilliant political move, because in the reality, you're seeing the hypocrisy both in the journalists as well as the leftist elites.
But is anybody believing what a brilliant move it was? I mean, yeah, DeSantis and his colleagues have done a very good job. Now they're showing people in one of the wealthiest parts of America exactly what folks down on the border, southern borders, are facing. Are they effective in that? Is that going to make any difference?
Well, all the mainstream media news was talking about it, and their angle is that, oh, how terrible this is and how he's abusing and using a political pawn. But the average person's looking at it and going, wait a second, why don't you take him? Didn't you say you wanted him?
Yeah.
So I think I think it's absolutely a brilliant move in order to highlight the issue in a world that it's very hard to get media attention on those real issues, and bringing the border issue back to the forefront,
right,
I think, is essential. And now we're seeing potentially 5 million illegal immigrants crossing the border in the United States since the Biden administration came to in power. That's unbelievable. How do we support and sustain that? I mean, they had this quote 11 million number for Trump. Now we're talking about, you know, a 50% increase in an 18-month period.
Right.
So that all that, I think, is coming home to roost, and people are saying, wait a second, what does this cost, and why won't those people take them, and how come the leftist elitists won't put them in their houses or feed them or actually take care of them?
Right.
And I think it will work. I think it's a good, I think it's a smart move to manipulate the media into reporting something.
I guess what I wonder about, Jimmy, is what kind of impact will this have on the 22 elections in terms of the overall balance of power?
You know, Al, I think so. You know, every one of these races is a local race.
Right.
And it, you know, Donald Trump is not running this time. A lot of his candidates that he's endorsed have won their primaries.
Right.
The left has been using two primary, the Democrats have used two primary targets. One, Donald Trump, and two, abortion.
Yeah.
Now, in New York, or maybe Martha's Vineyard, the abortion issue is going to play. But the rest of the United States...
How's it going to play, Jim?
I mean, because they've been manipulated, they've been used, they're actually arguing that, oh, this is awful, you're taking away a personal freedom and a personal right. They're actually not realizing that they're killing a child takes away that child's personal right.
Right.
But it plays well politically in one district in New York, you know, or in a handful of districts in New York or in California or Washington State. But the thing that is actually affecting everybody's life, that doesn't affect, there's that very few people that have abortions. I mean, way too many in my view every year.
Sure.
But, you know, you're not talking about millions of people every year. Millions of people are suffering from inflation. In fact, the entire population is. So the economy is still going to be a big issue. The border and the cost of the border is going to be a big issue. Crime is going to be a big issue. And what I believe is happening, and what the polling is not capturing, is that the mothers out there that are fed up with their children being locked out of schools, with the gender ideology that's being pushed on them, that the, you know, the crime in their neighborhood, the price of gas and the price of food, is causing them to step out en masse. And if you remember, in 2016 and 2020, the one demographic that did not improve or increase for Donald Trump was suburban moms. Donald Trump's not on the ballot this time. Suburban moms are coming out in force, and you're seeing it in school board elections in very liberal areas all across Florida, Miami-Dade County, some of these other races. And then, of course, you saw what happened in Virginia. And I think that's the quiet non-typical voter that is going to come out because they're tired of what's happened, the lockdowns, the crime, the inflation,
yeah,
and really the lack of faith in America.
Well, yeah, there is a certain amount of lack of faith in America right now. I think it's grown rapidly. What I find interesting is in my opinion, all of this pretty much happened just prior to the 2010 American events. How do you feel about that? I don't want to necessarily say the Obama administration, but I want to say what has happened in society since 2010.
You know, I think I will say the Obama administration. I think that he tried to push an agenda on America that people didn't want. And you can tell in the 2010 midterm elections how strongly people didn't want it. You may see a bigger backlash this time. I'm hoping, certainly, that we get a pushback against it because those policies that he was pushing at the end of his term in 2014 and 2015, which brought Donald Trump to power, were things like, you know, transgender bathrooms for kids in schools.
Right.
You know, forcing, you know, a lot of these issues that they were attempting to social engineer society to have now become policy and primary policy for the Democratic Party. I don't think anybody ever wanted to see this that rapidly at all. And I think they're believing their own lies, the Democrats. They think they're going to be pushing this abortion issue, where in fact that's not going to be the number one issue out there. And by all polling accounts, it's not anywhere near the top. And I think, it is a hope because, again, I will say this again, we don't have much trust and faith in our elections anymore.
No.
And so you don't know what influences are out there and how sophisticated and how much money is involved in trying to shape not only outcomes, but who gets what ballots and when the ballots are counted. And that's a difficult situation to face, but I think there's enough frustration that it will be very difficult to overcome the push. And I think Virginia and what just happened in Florida in their primaries are key races to take a look and say this could be the direction and the Democrats ought to realize.
Jimmy, we got about a minute left here and that's it. So are you saying that you think the elections will be a little more honest beginning in 2022 and continuing into 2024?
I think that there's going to be an attempt, a continued attempt to undermine election processes. And I think that they will, in some areas they'll be better, in some areas they'll be worse.
Yeah.
I think the places that they're worse will be the strong Democratic held areas because they don't want ID, they want mail-in ballots. And I think many other places, there'll be a lot more scrutiny and there's a lot more involvement for poll watching. And I think that's critical to bring back integrity into the system.
I think what's really important for listeners, and I have to say this, I love all of you people. Those of you who listen on the radio, I don't have a lot of communication with you. I wish I did. But our bloggers, I have a lot of communication with them. Let's all work together. Let's definitely get out to the polls. And let's try to keep the tenure around the mentality of America positive. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.